Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, December 7th. I'm Ray Graff. The temperatures are going to drop down to zero or a couple of degrees. If you're in the higher elevations, it might be minus something tonight. Yeah, I'm not a big fan. But today on Food Friday, we will hear tips and recipes for things that'll warm you up. Soups, stews, other good warm things for this time of year. And here in the studio, one of our favorite visitors, culinary instructor and author Jennifer Clare. If you have a question about winter cooking, give us a call, 800-348-2551. What warms you up? 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number, 800-348-2551. Soup, stews, Jennifer Clare, how can you lose? It's coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on this Food Friday, we will discuss recipes and tips for making soups, stews, and other food to keep us warm during the upcoming winter. It's almost like it's right here now. And here to answer your questions, Jennifer Clare. Jennifer is a culinary instructor and the founder of Home Cooking New York, a cooking school in New York City. She is the author of 6 Basic Cooking Techniques, Culinary Essentials for the Home Cook. Jennifer is a former food editor at Martha Stewart Living and the former recipes editor at the Wall Street Journal. She lives in the Hudson Valley. And the number, if you have a question for Jennifer or you want to share your own recipe, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number, 800-348-2551. Jennifer Clare, welcome back and happy holidays.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back.
You know, yesterday at the end of the Astronomy Vox Pop, I said, oh, Jennifer Clare is going to be here. It's been a couple of years.
Right. But it was not.
It was,
in fact.
In the spring?
Only, 8 months ago.
You're kidding me.
No. I know. Time flies.
And what did we talk about? We talked about your book, right?
Right. My book had just come out. And I drove up here and I made you a whole bunch of recipes.
Oh, yes.
Remember, Jim said, don't forget to bring food. He kept sort of drilling that into me.
Right.
Because I was a new
like
guest.
I'm some kind of an ogre.
Right.
Who you have
who
to pacify.
To be fed.
That's right. Well, you know, there's something to that.
Yes.
I got to tell you, you're a great guest. That much I recall.
Okay.
I'm senile on most other things, but I remember I don't have much trepidation about doing the program today.
Okay.
Our number is 800-348-2551. You want to talk about wintertime cooking and good warm stuff, 800-348-2551. Before we get to that, where you said you've been traveling all over the place? Where have you been?
I have been traveling. Well, one of the nice things about writing a cookbook is it gets you out of town.
Yeah.
So I've been teaching cooking classes at my school in New York City for 15 years, and I certainly love that. But I didn't realize that you could actually travel and teach. There are all these cooking schools all over America. Can you imagine?
And you could write off your travel that way.
That's true. But I never understand that. Business expense thing is a funny thing. You still have to pay up front.
Yes.
So you do get it off at the end, but a little bit.
That's another show about tax credits. I always have trouble with that. Yes.
Right.
But
so
anyway.
It has been great. I have loved taking the book. It's my passport to travel and teach. So I have, there are cooking schools all over the country that love having guest chef / cookbook authors passing through. So it's not always the same teachers teaching stuff. So I've been to the Stonewall Kitchen in Maine.
Nice.
So
beautiful.
Lovely.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I've been down to Central Market in Austin, not in Austin, Texas, in Texas. I'm blanking.
Shall I just name some cities?
I went to Plano, Dallas, and Fort Worth.
Okay.
There's three stores there.
Yeah.
I went to San Francisco and I taught at a wonderful new cooking school. It's called the Civic Kitchen there. And then I'll be going down to Austin actually in January to teach at a spa. That's another thing. You can travel and be the guest chef at a spa.
Do they put you up?
Yes.
Oh.
It is a fabulous perk. I would have written a cookbook so long ago if I knew about all this quote-unquote free travel.
You better crank out a couple more books if you want to keep traveling.
I hope I'm not a one-hit wonder because I keep waiting for the next inspiration to hit, and I so far have. But I'm spending this year promoting this book. It's so fun to go meet other people. I teach this class. It's based on the best-selling cooking class at my school in the city. So I decided, I should go around the country and teach this to other people. And people have the same questions no matter where they're from. But it is nice to meet people from, you know, New Yorkers are a particular lot.
Oh, indeed they are.
Yes.
The book is 6 Basic Cooking Techniques, Culinary Essentials for the Home Cook. And I know we talked about this back in March when you were on.
Right.
Not two years ago. But for those who were not tuned in, just give us a quick Cliff Notes version.
Sure. The 6 Basic Cooking Techniques are what I think are the foundational skills that every home cook should have so they can cook as many meals for themselves as they can.
Look at this.
It's knife skills.
Right. Well, we have that here in this neighborhood very well.
Yes. Two and three is cooking meat to perfection and making a pan sauce out of all the delicious debris left in your pan.
All right. Let's talk about that for a minute. Because now we did that. We did our turkey for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And used the drippings to some great extent.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So tell us, first of all, how you cook meat to perfection.
A lot of it is about getting a thermometer. So many people think that their meat is done when they can either cut into it and sort of visually judge by the juices.
Or wear it as shoe leather. Yeah.
Or poke at it. But really, every meat has a done temperature, and that is different for beef, pork, and chicken. So it's much better to have a device that tells you the actual temperature of the inside as opposed to relying on these visual cues.
You mean like a thermometer?
A thermometer, yes.
And what sort do you recommend?
It's called an instant read thermometer. It either comes as a little clock face, or they have a digital variety. But it's a very thin little probe that you stick in, and it instantly will tell you.
But will it go far enough in?
Yeah. It's about... Oh, I can't. What it's is like a, this? Like a four good, inch long.
That works
probe?
Really well on radio, by the way.
You put it in sideways, meaning through the center of the meat, not top to bottom, because you want to register the center. And for beef, it can be anywhere between 120 and 145, depending on how you like your steak. Chicken has to be 165, and pork can be around 150.
And so that's changed a little bit, though. The pork.
Only pork has changed because the FDA was. They take a long time to sort of get up with the times.
Well, I got to tell you, the turkey, we do. So
what'd you cook it to? Do you remember?
4,000 degrees. No, I don't. But I can remember this. It was Thanksgiving morning, and suddenly the big problem was, have a thermometer.
Oh.
It broke, so I had to go all over town. They were all sold out. Finally, the neighbor across the street had one, so we did use a thermometer. I wish I knew what the temperature was.
I hope it was 165.
We did the Rick Orlando method, where you
what's that?
You put it in very 500. For a brief amount of time to start.
Okay.
Then
to
you
brown.
Jack it down low and let it go.
So
and it
here's
came
my
out
question.
Perfectly.
Two questions. How big was your turkey? How many pounds? And how long did it take to cook?
23 pounds.
Okay.
And the bourbon started flowing, and I'm not sure when it actually was done, but it was several hours, right?
It is more. Well, the reason I ask is because I have been, A, I'm a culinary instructor, and B, I would know how long to roast a turkey. In fact, when I worked at Martha Stewart, I wrote an entire article called Thanksgiving 101 that had to prepare starting 4 days ahead. Every year, without fail, I cannot figure out how long to cook the turkey for. And I go back in my notes. I'm like, oh, it's 10 minutes per pound. It's 15 minutes per pound if it's stuffed. And I'm always, doing the calculations, because we also had a big bird, 23 pounds.
Yeah.
So that would have been about 4 hours of cooking. And I knew that sounded wrong. And it, lo and behold, was. We put they invited guests for 3 o'clock, put the turkey in at 11. It was done by like 1:30.
Ours was now, you were bringing back memories here through the haze. Ours was done early as well.
I don't get it.
Well, it's okay.
Yeah, but I don't get it yet. I try to give people guidelines for roasting your turkey, and I blow it every year, and I don't understand. I feel like for each pound over X pounds, there must be an incremental decrease in the number.
Oh,
there's some sort of physical.
Now it is the science forum. Jennifer Clare is here, 800-348-2551. Before we get to the calls and before we get to the topic at hand, which we haven't even gotten to yet.
Why are we even here?
Turkey croquettes. Do you ever make them?
No.
So,
is that mashed potatoes fried?
I don't know how they're made. Oh. But all I know is I imposed on my long-suffering wife. I said, we've got all this leftover turkey. Can you make turkey croquettes? She made the turkey croquettes. But
it's like a fried ball
something. You take the turkey and carrots and celery and whatever. You put it in a food processor, and then I glazed over. But you bread it and then fry it. And anyway.
How were they?
Incredible. But she said she'll never do it again.
It's a lot. Oh, God. Deep frying the day after Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
You already have enough cleanup.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with
I'm
her.
In the doghouse. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Keith in Queensbury. Keith, you're on.
Hi. I've got a baking question. I know it's a cooking show, but hopefully a baking question is in your wheelhouse.
I bet she bakes.
I'll see what I can pull out.
All right. So a friend of mine and I both love making pies. I've made tons of pies. And just recently, both of us had the same thing happen. And I had it, I actually tried making two, I made dough twice, and the same thing happened where the gluten just didn't form in the dough. So when I rolled it out, and tried to put it in the pie plate, it just totally fell apart.
Okay.
And I had it happen twice in a row, and I can't figure out why that would happen.
Well,
I didn't know if you had any tips.
Well, I have two observations.
Okay.
One is you actually don't want gluten to you don't want gluten to develop when you're making a pie crust. So that's a good thing. Gluten developing in a pie crust means you overmixed it, overrolled it, overhandled it, and then your crust will be very tough as opposed to flaky and buttery, which is what you want. Two is it's not that your gluten didn't develop. That's not what holds pie crust together. It's moisture. So what you're lacking, if it's falling apart, is you either need an egg yolk if you want to make it more tender, or just a couple more. How much water are you putting in? Are you using water?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Using water. Sometimes I've used milk in some of the pie crust
recipes
that I've used, but yeah, either water or milk.
Yeah, don't use milk. That will not help you.
Okay.
What, you need either water to help bind the flour and the butter together, or I was going to, I don't know, if this is in your wheelhouse, a couple tablespoons of hard alcohol actually helps a pie crust stay tender
because
it inhibits the development of gluten, which is what you, so if you're mixing it all together, you will activate the gluten just by mixing it. But the alcohol, this is a tip I got from Cooks Illustrated, up to 2 tablespoons of either bourbon or a clear, like a vodka.
You're kidding me.
No, and it all boils,
wow.
It all cooks off so you don't taste it. You'll smell it when you roll it out, so you'll be a little concerned.
I wouldn't put gin in it. I mean,
that's a weird flavor.
Yeah, that would
but
not
I'm saying
be good.
Vodka or bourbon. I mean, bourbon is good with anything.
I agree.
In a pie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So those are what I have to say to you.
Well, thanks, Keith. We appreciate the call and good luck. We have to take a quick break here. Jennifer Clare is our guest, 800-348-2551. Oh, yeah, she brought food. We have been so engrossed in the conversation, we didn't get to that. We'll do that in a minute. We'll be back. Always fun to have Jennifer Clare here every 3 or 4 years here on Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 800-348-2551. We talk about things that keep you warm today on an evening that promises to be very chilly tonight. So this is good timing. Soup, stews, and what have you. And Jennifer Clare, you brought something.
I did.
What is that?
The first stew that I'm going to introduce you to is called Ribollita.
Ribollita.
Ribollita. It's an Italian soup.
Nice.
Stew. That means in Italian, it means reboiled. And it was a way to stretch a bean and pasta soup, usually like a minestrone.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be a meal the next day. And you would take the leftovers, if you only had a little bit, and you would tear up day-old, dried-out bread.
Perfect.
And add more water to the soup and create ribollita. You have reboiled the soup and created these sort of custardy little bread croutons in here, which I realize I have to sort of find for you. Here
Our buddy Rocco DeFazio would be very proud of you for this.
So I teach a class at my school called the Winter Soups Workshop, and this is one of my favorites that I teach from there. So it's cucina povera, meaning poor cuisine. So
are you going to put something on this?
Yeah, so the base of this is just water and vegetables, so you have to do a lot to embellish its flavor. So the first thing I'm doing is I'm drizzling extra virgin olive oil on it, raw, meaning not cooked. So the flavor of extra virgin olive oil is much more prominent when you don't heat it.
Okay.
So that's the first drizzle on top of it. Right. And now I'm grating on the air. Grating Parmigiano Reggiano cheese. Do not skimp on the good cheese.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Don't take your Kraft green foil can and sprinkle that on my ribollita.
All right. Now, the radio trick for Food Friday is I'll have a bite here
and
turn my mic off. Now, you say something, Jennifer Clare. Go.
So, again, ribollita is one of those soups that stretches a meal to a second coming, but it also is just, it's a great way to understand how very humble ingredients can make an incredible dish at the end. So again, it's just tomatoes and kale and beans and carrots.
I love this.
Yeah, and it's water. It's not even broth. It's not anything fancy, but it's just, you caramelize each layer of this soup.
Oh.
So you take the onion, celery, carrots, onion, garlic, that part, and a whole bunch of parsley that you chop up. You put a cup of chopped parsley in, and you fry it in about a half a cup of olive oil.
This is more vegetables than I've had in, like, the last
week.
But it's
how you cook it. You cook it for 20 minutes till it turns into, like, a vegetable jam.
So delicious.
Oh, good.
Well done.
Okay.
Well, now, if you want to have a bite, I will certainly say something here. We have an email question, and then we'll get back to the phones.
Okay.
800-348-2551. This one's from Amy. Amy writes, is there an easy, more abridged way to make a cassoulet? Which is what?
A cassoulet is a sort of, it's a very classic rustic French bean and so many meats stew.
So this is similar to this without...
It's got garlic sausage in it. It's got duck confit. It's incredibly rich. And then on top, you sprinkle sort of larded up breadcrumbs and you bake it in the oven and it has this beautiful crust from the breadcrumbs and underneath is this bean stew. So I'll tell you my shortcut. So a couple years ago for Christmas dinner, my husband and I both love cassoulet. So there's a fabulous company out there called D'Artagnan. Yeah. D'Artagnan is sort of the purveyor of all duck products, you know, in the States. And I was trying to source duck confit. I was trying to source these particular beans that you use from the south of France. And I kept going back, and the only place people who sold this stuff was D'Artagnan. So I was going to order all this stuff from their website. And, oh, but they also have what's called a cassoulet kit.
Oh.
So, and it ended up being like maybe $12 a serving. So you make cassoulet not for one or two people. You make it for a big group.
Right.
So I would say go to D'Artagnan, and you get this fabulous kit. It's so easy to make because they send you the duck fat, they send you the beans, they send you the duck confit, the garlic sausage. I have no idea what else. But I remember whipping it up in about an hour. It takes a long time to bake, but it was outstanding.
Now this that you made, ribollita?
Ribollita.
You could add meat to this, right?
It's so funny you say that because I just taught this class last week and there was a guy in my class at every class, every soup that we made was, which just happened to be vegetarian. He's like, can you add meat to this?
What's the answer?
Meat to everything. This one I would not. You could add possibly sausage to it. I think to me, this is perfectly balanced.
I agree.
It's not missing anything.
I'm just saying if you wanted to.
If you want to have a meat soup. Don't add meat to this dish.
All right.
Just make a meat stew.
So you're going to be difficult now.
I am.
Okay, fine. Let's go back to the phones.
800-3- I'm a purist.
Fine. 800-348-2551. Jennifer Clare, our guest today. Peter in Albany. Peter.
Hello.
Hi, good afternoon. Chef Jennifer and Ray, happy holidays.
You too.
You dovetailed my question into about talking for a the D'Artagnan thing for a large group. I'm having trouble. I used to work in the industry, and I cook large quantities. Now I live alone, and I'm looking for tips on anything to cook for one or two.
Well, I mean, cooking for one or two, if we're talking about soups, I still recommend making a full portion, whether it serves four to six people, because soup is the kind of thing that you would make, you would have your portion of for the next day or two, and then certainly you're not going to want to eat it all week. So I, you know, recommend... It's just as easy to make more soup. Just pack it up into a container and put it in your freezer and forget about it. And in 3 months, you'll be very excited. There you have this homemade soup in your freezer.
Yeah.
So I would think for soup, I wouldn't cut that down even if you're only eating one portion at a time.
Got it.
I know that there are great, this whole cooking, there's a new cookbook out by Anita Lowe called Solo. And it's about cooking for one.
Yeah.
And it's
TV dinners and whatnot.
Well, no, it's certain stuff. There are many people out there, a lot of cookbook authors at a certain stage of life, you are cooking for one.
Yeah.
So it's a new one. It just came out, and it's gotten a lot of good reviews if you want to take a
peek. I'm sorry, Anita Lowe, L-O-W-E?
No, L-O, and the book is called
L-O.
It's called Solo.
Got it.
Thanks.
Got it.
Peter, appreciate the call.
Thanks for your tip.
Sure.
Have a happy holiday, sir. We'll talk to you. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jennifer Clare, the guest today. The book, if you weren't here when she was on a couple of years ago, was...
You're making me very old.
No, it was March, let's say 8 months ago. Six Basic Cooking Techniques, Culinary Essentials for the Home Cook. Jennifer is a former food editor at Martha Stewart Living. Did you ever deal with Martha Stewart?
Of course.
Was she
luckily
nice?
Not too much.
Did she yell at you?
Yes.
She did.
The first time I met her, she yelled at me. And I have this unfortunate habit of smiling when somebody is upset at me.
Really?
I think you're smiling now. I know you're not upset.
No,
me, but
I'm
when
not,
I was younger in my 20s, that's how I deflected fear.
Ah.
I would have this weird grin on my face like a Cheshire cat.
And what did she do about that?
Well, my boss was watching me interact with her, and she was yelling at me because I had bought a package of crumbled blue cheese. You know how you can buy cheese that's already been crumbled for you.
Right.
And you have to, as a food editor, when you test recipes, you have to put in an order with the market that we used. And they would deliver it, and I guess I said crumbled blue cheese. And they sent me a box of crumbled blue cheese. She was outraged that we would use such a product.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, why wasn't I buying a slab of goat cheese? And was I, goat cheese, blue cheese, and crumbling it myself? Was I lazy?
Oh.
And
was this before she was in the slammer or afterwards?
No, she wasn't in the slammer when I was there.
Now, she seems a volatile sort. Maybe she'd make a good president.
She has a great, I love the company she created. I had a dream job.
Yeah.
But she's a tough cookie. All right. No one would argue with that.
Jennifer Clare is here, and this is a decidedly low maintenance program. So there'll be no yelling about the blue cheese. let's go back to the phones. Dan in Albany. Dan, you're on.
Oh, hey. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick word. I was trying to do a little consider a spherical cow physics on the turkey cooking problem.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
The thing is, it can't really be proportional just to the mass, right? Because if in a microwave, that would make sense, right? Because you're putting in a fixed amount of energy and basically all the energy goes into the meat. So then just however much mass you got, you know, that's how long it's going to take. But with the turkey, it's, you know, the oven is going to stay at the temperature. There's plenty of power in that heating element at the bottom to keep it at the temperature you want.
Yeah.
So it's really diffusion. So then it's really like the situation about how like a grown-up person, you know, takes longer to get hypothermia than a kid does. It has to do with like surface to volume. So like if it were a spherical turkey, you're at like a, you know, it's the 1/3 power of mass. So like each additional pound would be a lot less, but it's not really spherical. It's a complicated shape. So it's probably going to be something like the square root of the mass.
How come no one has, you know, how like every single magazine and newspaper talks about Thanksgiving ad nauseum and nobody has ever talked about this yet. I know that it has to happen.
We have a lot of smart listeners. Yeah. And Dan, by the way, as a side note, Spherical Turkey was one of my favorite bands from the 60s.
I love them.
What line of work are you in that you understand?
I'm a meteorologist. So we have to think about heat flowing around all
my
the time.
God, that is fascinating.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, volume mass goes as like if it's a sphere, then mass goes as the third power of this, you know, the length of the
thing. You need to pitch
and
this.
And area goes as the square. So anyway, I won't go on.
I know, but I want you to write about this in some food publication. And if you pitch this to any food publication, they would run it because it is a fascinating topic that requires clearly a meteorologist.
Okay. And make sure you mention Jennifer Clare's name when you write the article.
I absolutely. Thanks for the suggestion.
Dan,
have a great day. Yeah. Thanks for your great program.
Thanks for the call. Well, you see, public radio listeners, very
amazing.
Smart.
Did he say meteorologist? Or,
yeah.
Okay. I've thought for a second I froze about what his
meteorology. You know, that's weather and such.
That's amazing. Yeah. I was saying that about the turkey, I'm like, what branch of science would know this? And there's the answer.
You see? All right, over to Jim. Oh, our buddy Jim in North Pownell. Jim, you're on.
Are you a regular on this show?
He is.
Yes, I am. And Jennifer, I am going to buy your cookbook.
Oh, thank you.
And add it to my collection of cookbooks. But I just want to make a recommendation that anybody out there who can get a hold of a copy of the 1896 Boston Cooking School Cookbook.
Jim, how are they going to get that, Jim? How?
That's a little outdated, don't you think?
How are you going to, where are you going to find it?
The reprints.
Oh, I see.
They are reprints, and it is the Bible of cooking. And everything that Jennifer has said about the temperature of meats and you know, what you got to do, is in the Fanny Farmer Cookbook. How to make a soup.
Oh,
these are a lot of fundamental culinary, you know, principles. But I would say a lot of new cooks would find it very hard to penetrate the very old English style and cupfuls. And because I've read that book, I mean, I haven't read it, but I've seen this book, and it is, I love it.
Yeah.
But it is not practical for the new cook.
Believe me, I am going to go to the Bennington Bookshop and get your cookbook.
Nice. You know, Jim.
And put it on my shelf.
All right. And before Jim goes, Jennifer, I just want to say that this is not his best call of the week.
His best
call of the week was much earlier when he talked about burying bodies in backyards in Vermont. It was very exciting.
Hey, Ray,
you're going to
get a package. You're going to get a package. It's coming in the mail. I mailed it yesterday.
If you send me a cadaver, Jim, I'm going to be very upset.
No, it's not a cadaver. Right. It's just the information.
All right, man. Thanks a lot for the call. Thank you. Have a great weekend. Jennifer Clare is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We've been talking about a lot of stuff. The main topic is food, that is soup and right. warm things.
Food can really launch you in every direction.
Ribollita is fabulous. I mean, I've eaten more of this than I do usually on my
shows.
Right,
you told me, you're like, I'm just going to have a bite.
It's really
that
good.
That is more than a
what
bite.
What else did you bring?
All right. Well, so our next, I hope this is not redundant, but that's just how I cook.
Okay.
This is another Italian dish. This is just a very classic sausage and escarole soup.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is one of my favorites.
Yep.
And it's just chicken broth. I put a little pasta in here too. But it's just, I love cooking with bitter vegetables. So escarole is one of my favorite things to add to food because it just, a lot of vegetables don't have a lot of additional flavor, but bitter greens always give this sort of really nice complexity.
What makes it bitter?
I don't know what makes it bitter. Uh-oh. But there's a whole host of bitter greens. So like arugula, radicchio, endive, escarole, broccoli rabe, and they're usually the ones that the Italians love.
Yes.
Maybe why I gravitate towards Italian food, because they're all about balance.
Right.
So this one does not need any cheese because it's got sausage in it, so it's definitely rich enough.
Okay.
So hold on, I'm going to portion out your little...
This is right. Yeah, just a molecule
just
or two.
Just a molecule. Right, yeah. We know about your molecules.
All right.
And you got to get, because everything is, you know, it's very simple. It's just a head of escarole, chicken broth, and... sausage. You got.
How long do you cook that before the escarole is complete mush?
Well, that's the nice thing about this. All I did was brown the sausage first.
That's what I'm saying. It's not mush.
You brown the sausage first, then I put in the chicken broth, and I throw the escarole in, and I boil it for about 3 minutes. You don't want to overcook the greens. So it's like, it's one of those fast soups.
All right. I'm going to give the number, and then you'll say something for about 30 seconds.
Okay.
800-348-2551. If you want to talk to Jennifer Clare, and Jennifer Clare, start talking now.
Okay. Wait, I'm supposed to be talking about the soup?
I don't know. I'm going to have a bite. Yeah, whatever you want, really. Talk about meteorology.
I do. Well, the thing about when you said, oh, we're going to do a winter soups or a winter, you know, comfort food show, everything I realize that I love about winter comfort foods is that it all goes in one pot. So as the summer rolls along, I love all the fresh vegetables in the farmer's market. Oh, Ray is going crazy, by the way, for the soup. You can't see it, but I'm going to...
You finish that sentence, and then I'll tell you about the soup.
So I love all the fresh vegetables in the farmer's market. I love the peaches and the plums and all that. But I must say, once the cold weather runs around, I don't miss it. Like, I can't wait to hunker down because I don't cook as much in the summer. I assemble. I eat lots of fresh foods, but I don't cook.
This looks like a simple dish to make.
Yeah, deceptive.
Tell me about the broth, because I think I could probably have this broth by itself.
Yeah, and that's because of the escarole. So this, I'll tell you, this is boxed chicken broth. It is Pacific Organic, like low-sodium chicken broth. So you want to I'm not a big fan of the crummy chicken broths. Read your ingredient labels of chicken broth. They're so different.
Okay, thank you for not mentioning the actual brand names of the crummy ones. Thank you.
Well, I get in trouble.
Yes.
If you read the sides, and there should be no sugar in it, there should be no dextrose, there should be no monosodium glutamate. That just means it's a crummy broth, and they had to add all these things in it to make it taste better.
All right.
So when you're making the soup, it's just a box of chicken broth, a pound of sausages, some garlic, and the escarole. So when you cook the sausage, all the flavors from the sausage, like chili peppers and usually fennel seeds, salt, the fat from the pork, the bitterness from the escarole, when that all cooks... That's what that broth takes on. That's why it doesn't need any cheese. It doesn't need anything. I did not even put any. I always have little secret ingredients I put in things. This was nothing.
I got to say.
Yeah, you could drink that. It's an elixir.
You have had now. You are now two for two.
Okay.
Our number is 800-348-2551. And the sausage is just regular Italian
sausage?
It's
a pork. Yeah, regular Italian sausage.
It's really good.
Yeah, but I mean, a good one. Like I got the place that I buy it from gets it from Arthur Avenue in the Bronx.
Yeah.
So don't. Yeah, don't get pre-cooked sausages.
Don't
it has
skimp.
To be fresh sausage meat. Yeah. When you cook simply, that's why in Italy all the food is good. It's super simple. The ingredient lists are very short, but everything is the best quality.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Let's get another call in here before our next break. And Denise in Pittsfield. Denise.
Hi.
Hi.
I was so excited to hear the word croquettes because sometimes I think I'm the only one who still makes them.
I made my wife do it. My mother and grandmother used to make them, and she's like, what are croquettes? But they were delicious.
They're old school.
Everybody loved them.
They are. You know what? They're so delicious. But I don't like to deep fry food, so I found a way to make them without frying them, and they're delicious.
How?
And they're easy. And it's not a turkey dinner leftover thing. I make them all the time. You melt butter, you add flour, then you add chicken broth and milk and let it cook out the flour. And then you add finely chopped yellow onion, paprika, nutmeg, fresh parsley, and salt and pepper, and you let that cool. And then when it's all cool, you add a cup and a half of chicken or turkey.
She's making
and you can even do spam if you want to make it gross.
Spam? I've had ham croquettes before.
I think spam is a dirty word. Shouldn't use it on the
show. No, I said spam.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay.
Spam is a dirty word.
So then you roll them into, form them into croquettes. You put them in breadcrumbs, then in the egg mixture.
But how are you cooking the breadcrumbs instead of the frying?
You put them in a pan with olive oil on the bottom, okay? Then before you put them in the oven, you spray them with oil, with an oil spray, like, you know, Pam typically.
No,
but you
don't do that.
Also,
here's what you do. Instead of Pam, I hate
that.
Pam.
Okay.
But get those Misto bottles from, you know, some store that I can't mention, but
okay.
It has three.
Yeah, that's what I was
BBB.
Thinking. I could get one of those. Absolutely.
And you just put extra virgin olive oil in there. And then, and then you can spray anything. It's very easy, but then you don't have to put propellant on your food.
Okay.
Which is what.
Well, that's great. Now, I want to appreciate, number one, you calling in, Denise. Number two, I appreciate Jennifer Claire saying terrible things about a noted product, and now the legal department's going to be yelling at me.
Okay.
Zach, let's take a break while I take.
God, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Oh, it's my fault.
Everything's great. Somebody else will be in here in a moment. Let's take a break. It's Vox Pop Food Friday. Ray Graff here today, joined by Jennifer Claire, whose book, Six Basic Cooking Techniques, is sweeping the nation. She's been on a nationwide tour, and she stopped in here to talk about foods that keep you warm over the cold weather months. This one came in via email from Emily in Plainfield, Massachusetts, and it says, greetings, Ray and Jennifer. Regarding the experienced baker who made pie dough that didn't hold together but couldn't figure out why. Emily writes, I'm no expert. But I have found that if the shortening, I use butter exclusively, is closer to room temperature rather than good and cold when I cut it into the flour, even if I then refrigerate the dough, no matter what I do, it keeps crumbling apart when I try to roll it out and make a crust. In fact, I like to put the butter in the freezer and then grate the frozen butter over the flour with a regular box cheese grater and then cut the shredded butter into the flour. I end up with a pie dough that is very easy to handle.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's a great technique. I have seen
you
that
do that?
Before. I don't do that. I mean, you do have to start with cold butter.
That's brilliant, though. Use a cheese grater.
It's just a lot of work. Grating frozen butter, which I have done, and I'm sure the reader will, or the writer will attest to, it's a lot of work. So sometimes if you can just do it by hand.
Yeah.
I do. The reason I love pie is because it is so tactile. Like, there's very few things that I do, you know, in my life other than cooking that sort of help me zen out. And rubbing butter into flour to make a pie is my zen. And so I don't mind it.
Rubbing butter. That was the first
rubbing
album
butter.
From Spherical Turkey. Very good stuff. What's your favorite pie that you like to make?
What I like to make. I guess I make a lot of apple pie. That is my husband's preferred pie. So,
yeah.
And I feel like I don't make pies in the summertime as much. I guess I make a blueberry pie if we go blueberry picking. But once the fall, you know, comes around and I want to turn on the oven, apples seem to be in season, so that seems to be the pie. And an apple pie is good for every meal of the day. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah, oh no,
but
I know that.
Yeah, it could be a meal for breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
I think the Ribollita could be breakfast as well.
And so in our household, once we make pie, then breakfast is a slice of pie with a side of scrambled eggs.
Do you put, with scrambled eggs?
It's so good.
Do you put cheese on the pie?
I don't. I know people do.
Yeah.
But
sharp cheddar?
I like cheese and apple together, but once it's in a pie, no cheese for
me. Fair enough. Let's go back to the phones. Jennifer Claire, our guest, 800-348-2551, the number. Michelle in Cornwall. Michelle.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
My question is about something that I do a lot, which is to make food for guests before I've actually made it myself. And I'm planning on making a cod chowder that's kind of a New England style. And I just want to know if the recipe that I'm looking at is going to be thick enough. If it's not, how do I make it more thick?
It's all about flour. So in the recipe, how much flour and how much liquid is there?
There's a lot of liquid. It didn't list flour, actually, in the ingredients.
Then
I don't have it in front
thick.
Of me, but I know that they called for
a common thickener for clam chowder and cod chowder is you melt your fat in the pan, whether it's bacon fat or butter, and then you add flour to that and you make a roux. R-O-U-X is the thickening.
Make a roux.
Yeah. And then when any liquid that you add to that, when it comes to a boil, will thicken. It will give you that chowdery consistency. So if it doesn't list flour, is there any other thickener in this recipe?
No, I mean, there are potatoes in the soup, but it really was just vegetables and the clam juice and some stock and and cream at the end. But if I make a roux, I know that there is bacon in the recipe. So if I make a roux with the bacon,
fat,
we'll be in business.
Start with a couple tablespoons and see how it goes for your first run. But
thanks, Michelle.
That's great. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Have a good day. 800-348-2551. We go to Maureen in Schenectady. Hello, Maureen.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I just had a comment about the Fannie Farmer Boston School of Cooking book that Jen had talked about.
Yep.
I discovered that a couple of years ago. I was completely obsessed. And I've tried some of the, some of the techniques and whatnot in it. And I had a fantasy of doing one of these Julia and Julia books.
Uh-huh.
Maybe
with that book?
With that book.
You may not eat as well, I'm afraid.
What's a Julia and Julia book?
Julia and Julia is this fabulous, it was a blog turned into a movie starring Meryl Streep as Julia Child, but a woman wrote a blog where she made every single recipe in Mastering the Art of French Cooking by Julia Child.
Now I remember.
Yeah, and then they made a movie out of it, which was a great movie, but only half of the movie. Like the part where the modern day blogger, she was... I love Amy Adams as the actress, but it was boring. The best part was watching Meryl Streep portray Julia Child.
There you go. John Candy did a very good Julia Child.
Did he?
From Second City TV. Maureen, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. The guest today, Jennifer Clare. And let's go to Mary in Saratoga Springs. Mary.
Oh, hi, Ray. I'm in the middle of baking and I stopped to call you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm calling about two people who spoke on the phone earlier. One was a gentleman about cooking for one. I have a terrific one. It's called The Pleasures of Cooking for One by Judith Jones.
That was the other book I was going to recommend.
She was an editor of Julia Child's books.
Ah.
And in fact, she just passed away. But surprisingly, the book is very much up to date, easy to use. And it's terrific for anyone, because after the kids left and my husband died, I'm going nuts because I'm used to cooking for eight people. But this is marvelous. Okay. The other book is, I lived in San Francisco for a while, and Marion Cunningham, a cookbook writer, was well known, and I have her 1990 edition of the revised Fannie Farmer cookbook, and it's absolutely terrific. So I just thought the call you and tell you that.
Mary, what are you baking today, Mary?
Yeah.
Oh, you want to know?
Sure.
It's, everybody loves it. It's my East 62nd Street lemon cake from the New York Times.
Oh, my gosh.
I think that's in a book. I'm reading a new fabulous cookbook called Genius Desserts. It was just put out this year by the folks at Food 52. And I just opened up to the cake chapter, and I'm pretty sure that recipe is in this book.
Well, Mary, get back to it.
I'm going to make it now.
Thank you for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. Maybe I'll run a cake over to you.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, Ray. Thank you.
Have a good one. See ya. Bye. Over to Susan in Del Mar. Susan, you're on.
Thank you, Ray and Jennifer. I appreciate your taking my call. I just wanted to weigh in on the cooking of the turkey. I've cooked turkeys many years, but 23, 24 pounds, usually stuffed. And I find the side of the pan really influences how long my turkeys would cook.
Interesting.
The size
my
of
mom's
the pan?
Old.
Oh.
The sides. If I was a high-sided, one of those big old oval pans with the cover, they're the dark color with the white
spots. Right, I know what you're
speckled.
Talking about. Uh-huh.
It would cook a lot faster than my aluminum pan, which had like a 3-inch side on it. So I find the side of the roasting pan, the height of the roasting sides, I should say, really influenced the cooking of my turkey.
I wonder if it was the material.
I don't don't know if it's. I also think it was the size of the oven. I roasted this turkey in question in California at my brother's kitchen.
Yeah.
So it's not an oven I'm familiar with, but it was also a very small oven. So like the turkey just fit in the oven. There was no air circulation.
Yeah. Oh, you make a point.
So I, you know.
That's a good point too. Yeah. Also on pie crust, I refrigerate my shortening. I refreeze my flour, and I use ice water when I'm adding the liquid to my pie crust, and then I. And then I chill the pie crust before I roll, and it turns out great. Yeah. Great.
Well, Susan, thanks.
I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you very much for calling. Have a great weekend. Let's go to Jen in Buskirk. Jen.
Hi.
Hi.
I was listening to all these delicious soups, and we cook a lot with venison.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of venison sausage, and I'm just curious if you have any like tricks on how to make it rich and flavorful, like it was a pork sausage.
I do not have a lot of experience with venison in terms of the flavor. I mean, a sausage is usually just meat chopped up with lots of seasonings and fat. And if that's the case, if it's got a good portion of fat, because I know venison is extremely
lean.
You could probably swap it out for this escarole soup with chicken broth. My only concern is that it would be tough. Like if you boil it in liquid,
it's a tough thing to get right. When you get it right, venison is great. But if you don't get it right, it's a tough thing.
So I would keep it in the casing. Venison sausage probably needs to stay with its fat in the casing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Well, you stumped the band, Jen.
I know.
Well, thank you.
Well, I guess I'll have to keep practicing.
All right. Well, let us know how you did. Appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jennifer Clare is here. You got one more thing to show me. What is that?
All right. This is my new favorite trick up my sleeve. Ooh. I always have a trick up my sleeve.
Nice.
And this is because while I'm working at my desk, you know, during the day and I get bored, I have to go over to Facebook and see what's going on.
Sure.
And because I'm so obviously a food lover, anything in my feed is about food.
Okay.
So every once in a while, I just get – it's good. I sort of do it for research. So there's always a recipe floating around in there from some person I follow that I'm going to have for dinner.
Oh, look at that.
This is hot chocolate.
Yeah, perfect.
It's Mexican hot chocolate. And the trick for this one is that there's no dairy in it, which is not something I normally gravitate toward because I love dairy.
All right.
But it's hard to make hot chocolate without
–
cheers. It's hard to make hot chocolate without dairy because it gives it that richness and its creaminess. Now, would you ever?
Oh my gosh!
I know. Well, would you know that didn't have dairy?
No. Tell me about this.
Okay. So first of all, I have to give credit where credit is due. This is a recipe that I read off of Milk Street. Milk Street is a magazine started by Christopher Kimball, who used to be the head of the American's Test Kitchen.
Right.
Cooks Illustrated, whole thing. Anyways, this is a recipe that I was, you know, trolled me on the interwebs, and it is Mexican hot chocolate, and you take very good quality bittersweet chocolate chips or chocolate bar, put it into a blender, and you pour a cup of boiling water on top of it, cinnamon, and a dash of something spicy, like cayenne pepper. This has ancho chili powder.
Yeah.
And you carefully put the top on your blender with a towel over it, and you press it, start on low, because boiling water in a blender is actually something I should never say you should blend
on
the air because
okay.
it's just very dangerous because
okay.
a lot of pressure builds up if you put the lid on.
Sure.
So I usually put the lid on top of the blender, but I don't put that middle section. You know how there's like a part you can remove to pour things? So take that out and put a towel over it and start slow and blend it. And the boiling water basically melts the chocolate and seasons it with all of the cinnamon and the ancho chili. And there's actually a pinch of salt in here, too. Very key.
I agree.
Then the thing that makes it rich and thick that coats your tongue is a tablespoon of almond butter.
Oh, my heavens.
It could be any butter. It could be peanut butter. It could be cashew butter. But that a lot of times when you buy commercial chocolate milk, it always has carrageenan or tapioca starch, something to give it that viscousness.
Yeah.
But this, without the dairy, that tablespoon of almond butter, it's so good, isn't
This is one of the best things I've ever had. And I would say that if I wasn't concerned that I would, A, scald myself, B, make a huge mess, I would try making this at home.
Well, that's how I do it. So when it's written, they actually had you put quote-unquote hot water in it, because I think I'm sure printing a recipe that says boiling water in blender is dangerous.
Yeah, and saying it over the radio, by the way, is pretty dangerous.
So you can put just hot water in it and then mix some boiling water in it at the end.
Oh, that's a good
idea.
To
warm it up, or just warm it up in the stove.
This is unbelievable.
I know.
Jennifer Clare, well done. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Andy in Ferrisburg, Vermont. Andy, you're on.
Hey, greetings and salutations.
And to you.
So I'm a big Chris Kimball fan also.
Uh-huh.
And he taught me in one of his recipes how to braise, which is half chicken stock and half beef stock with mirepoix. And then I add Worcestershire and a little anchovy. Mm. And then I make too much stock for the roast. And then I save the leftover for my escarole sausage soup with and then I add the white beans and using Arthur Avenue sausage is cheating and you should be ashamed of it.
Why? What do you mean?
Can't get it.
Oh well, oh, I know. He makes a point. It's right. Probably
I'm
tough
more
to get.
South than you. I had to drive an hour and a half north. So there must be some. Is there a good Italian butcher in this Albany? I mean, I
well,
know the listeners.
Andy's in Ferrisburg, Vermont.
Central Vermont.
Yeah.
Oh. Like, well, so your local good. Italian
I can find
butcher.
A sled dog driver, but yeah. No, an Italian butcher.
Well, it might be worth the drive, so, Andy.
Arthur Avenue has not cornered
the
market.
Ray, if you're helping me out there.
What'd you say now?
I said I'd prefer to fly if you want to help me out there.
Yeah, yeah, we don't do that. We'll send the WAMC blimp over at some point.
Awesome.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate the call. Let's see. Who's been waiting here? Let's go to Susan in Massachusetts. Susan, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
I have a really dumb question.
Well, like I always say when I'm teaching, no such thing.
So I don't bake a whole lot, but recently I've made a couple of pie crusts, and I followed the directions, but I don't understand why you need to use ice-cold butter and ice-cold water. Is it the development of gluten?
Nope.
And
it is
does it have to do with shrinkage?
No, it has to do with keeping the, there's two components of a pie dough. There's the fat, and then there's the flour water mixture, basically the dough. And you do not want them to be amalgamated. Like when you make a cookie dough, you can't look at a cookie dough and see any kind of differentiation between the flour, the butter, the eggs.
Yeah.
That's all amalgamated. Pie crust is the opposite. You need the fat to stay separate from the flour because the fat, when it's in the oven, is what melts and creates those little pockets, and that's what those flakes are.
Yeah.
So if you don't have pieces of suspended fat in your crust, you have a cookie dough, basically. And so the only way to keep it from melting into the flour is to keep it ice cold because your hands or the Cuisinart, the rolling out, all these things, you know, add temperature and heat and make the butter soften. So if it, like a pastry kitchen is always separate from the regular kitchen in a restaurant. It's always downstairs, usually in the basement, so it can be cold. People use marble rolling pins, marble countertops. If you want to get crazy, you can even buy a rolling pin that's hollow that you fill with ice water.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
All in the hopes that you'll keep your butter separate from the flour.
There you go.
That was an excellent answer.
Huh.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Well, thank you, Susan. We appreciate the call. Quickly now, in the waning moment or two, let's go to Megan in New Hampshire. Megan, you're on.
Hello.
Oh, hello. I just wanted to give you a little tip that I learned many years ago from an old cookbook, and that is with cooking large turkeys, which I do them from, because we have big Thanksgivings, and I raise them 28 to 40 pounds. Whoa. So when you get into those bigger weights, the best thing is to put it in that very hot oven, as you mentioned earlier, for maybe 15 minutes, and then turn it down to 300 and only cook it for 13 to 15 minutes a pound, and it comes out perfectly every time.
I think
that's not so. I cooked it for 10 minutes a pound and it was still overdone.
Oh
so
boy.
I think there's so many factors here.
What did you have in the stuffing? Like well,
depleted
uranium?
I don't
or?
Stuff. I do not stuff turkeys. Ah. There are people who stuff and people who don't.
Well, Megan, thank you for that call. And Jennifer, Claire, how do people find you on the interweb?
You can find me on my website, homecookingny.com.
And where will the book tour take you next?
I think my next and possibly final. I'm a little tired
really?
From the travel. Well, I like it, but I think at a certain
road
point,
weary,
yeah,
are you?
Is going to be Austin, Texas.
Well, I hope that you don't wait another 3 years to come on the show.
I will not.
Jennifer Claire has been our guest. Support comes from Uncle Sam's All-American Chocolate Factory, celebrating the holidays with truffles, almond butter, crunch, sea-salted caramels, peanut brittle, ribbon candy, Albany Street, Schenectady, and Newton Plaza, Loudonville. UncleSamsCandy.com. Big Elm Brewing. Tap room open Thursday through Sunday, noon to 7 p.m. Crafting ales and lagers in Sheffield, Massachusetts since 2012. BigElmBeer.com. Personal Wine Cellar, Glenville. Family-owned business since 2011, offering a selection of wines, spirits, and libations. Home of the Cellar Dweller. Monthly scotch and bourbon tastings. Home delivery available. 518-399-9463. And 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, seasonally inspired pub fare, now offering traditional wood-fired Neapolitan pizza, catering, menu, and hours, 20railroad.com. Well, thanks again to Jennifer Clare for being here. A fun hour. Thank you for listening and for some great calls and emails today. Zachary Malloy has been our engineer all week. Good job, Zach. Barb King. No, that wasn't Barb. That's not Barb King. I got to be honest with Jesse. Yeah, well, thank you for being here. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. Alan will be back in the big chair on Monday for a medical Monday. Right now, stand by for news.